76CR, State the Secret. Representing the state of Wisconsin, which is the petitioner, is Attorney Thomas Balestrieri, who's Assistant Attorney General of the state of Wisconsin. Mr. Balestrieri.
Thank you. I think the problem here is that you all have the same first initial.
J, right.
Except for you, of course.
Right.
That's easy to get confused.
I'm glad you clarified that. Try Sechrist.
Okay. Sechrist definitely needs some clarification.
Okay.
There's no question
about
that.
We've been waiting for you.
Because the law is a mess. There's no question about it. And
any particular opinion?
That's a mess? Yeah, every one of them probably. This case presents a very specific issue in which the state of the law is in flux in other courts. A number of courts have sided with the defense position on this issue. A number of courts have sided with the state's position on this issue. This court has taken the position that it isn't going to decide the issue. At least that's what your position was in a previous case where the issue was presented. So it's almost like writing on a clean slate, except I think it's probably more like writing on a slate that was previously written on and then sort of half erased, and now it's just a bunch of smudges. So I think what I'd like to do in the oral argument is just kind of start at the beginning and then maybe work our way down to the specific issue and try to show you why that specific issue should be decided in favor of the position that the state has taken in this case. The most fundamental proposition, and one on which there is substantial agreement, is that at least in some circumstances, the distinctive odor of a controlled substance alone, in this case we're talking about marijuana, is sufficient to establish probable cause to believe that the substance is present in the immediate vicinity. When you smell marijuana burning, you smell the odor of marijuana, you've got a pretty good idea that there's marijuana around. I think that we can all agree on. Then the problem comes, does this smell, and this smell alone, without anything further, give the police probable cause to take some kind of action as a result of what they smell? And again, if we take this just one step further and we ask, does the smell of marijuana alone give the police probable cause to conduct a search? There's not much question, there's not much dispute among other courts, including this one.
Okay, so if we came into this room, we're all gone for lunch, and we come in and there's a smell of marijuana, and Superior Police, which was expected, didn't come, but suppose they were here, would they have a right to search all of us?
Well, they'd have a... See, that's where we get a little bit more
okay.
Complicated. I'm talking...
Suppose I'm here alone with the smell of marijuana. I'll make it simple.
What this does, the smell of marijuana gives us reason to believe that there's marijuana here somewhere in the courtroom.
Or was.
Somewhere in the courtroom.
Right.
In order to search a specific person, we would have to have a few additional facts to enable us to zero in on that particular person as the source of the odor.
I'm all alone.
You're all alone. But this is a big courtroom.
Oh, but there's no one else here except the smell.
Yeah, but what we'd have to know is, where's the smell coming from?
Right.
If you were over there by the books, the smell was coming from the bench, that would be a situation where we'd say, no, the police would not have probable cause to search you because they'd have no reason to believe that you were the source of the marijuana. On the other hand, if the situation were different, you were over there by the books, and that's where the odor was coming from. And as the police walked over to you, the smell got stronger and stronger and stronger, and they could tell it was coming directly from your person as opposed to some other place in the courtroom, then they would have probable cause to conduct a search of you, of your person.
And maybe the bookcases too. I'm with you.
Okay. So, as in
what
all...
What about arresting me?
I'm sorry?
What about arresting me?
Well, arresting you presents a case of slightly more difficulty.
But do you want to take it between searching me and arresting me? Do you have another step you want in there? You are leading us. I don't want to lead you further than you want to
go. And
but
we
faster.
We're willing to concede that the law provides that in order to arrest someone for possessing a controlled substance, there has to be probable cause to believe not only that there is this substance in the vicinity, but that the particular person who is being arrested has possession of that substance.
That was what you told me on the search. You needed to conduct it on me and have probable cause to believe that I was the smoker.
Right. In that case, we have in the situation that you presented, we have two kinds of probable cause. We have probable cause to search you, and we have probable cause to arrest you, because in both cases, we have reason to believe that you were the person who was in possession of the marijuana. And that's kind of the critical thing.
Then why is the arresting slightly more difficult? What's the slightly more difficult part of it?
Well, theoretically, there has to be more shown to conduct an arrest than to conduct a search. To conduct a search, that's all we need to know, is that there is a controlled substance in the area, and we can search for it. To arrest someone for possession of that controlled substance, we have to have additional facts showing not only that there is a substance in the area, but that a particular person has possession of that substance. So a few more facts have to be shown to make an arrest than simply to conduct a search.
You seem to be giving away at least part of your case, Mr. Balistrieri, and maybe you did it in your brief, but are you saying that in this case, with these facts, there was not probable cause to arrest?
No, I'm not saying that there was not probable cause in this case.
What did we have here that was that extra something?
Well, I think what we had here was some facts showing not only that there was marijuana present in Mr. Sechrist's vehicle at one time, but sufficient additional facts, showing that he was the one who possessed that marijuana at one time.
What were those facts?
The facts that we all agree on being that he was alone in the vehicle, there was no one else there, there was a strong odor of marijuana in the vehicle. There is a fact which is an additional fact which is disputed. The circuit judge, after listening to the testimony presented at the suppression hearing, found as a matter of fact that the officers not only smelled an odor of marijuana in the vehicle, but that the odor was coming from the place where Mr. Sechrist was seated in that vehicle. The Court of Appeals didn't like that fact. They said that that's not supported by the record.
What kind of car was that? What kind of car was he driving? Stretch limo?
No, it was a small, compact-type car. I don't remember.
Two-door, four-door?
I mean,
you said this was a big room.
Yeah.
And there would be the smell of smoke would be only in one part of it. I don't know how long it would take to permeate the entire room. But if it's only one part of it, you were not willing to search me unless I was in the part that the odor was in. But in a car, you're dealing with a very small volume.
Well, in this case, yeah, it was a compact car.
Right, compact car. So, I mean, how can you identify it to the driver's side and not the front passenger or the rear of the driver? I mean, a stretch limo, with a glass door, we could say, hey, it was the driver. But in a compact car, how can you tell where the smell's coming from?
Well, if it's strong enough and we do have testimony that the odor was strong. The officer was 2 to 3 feet from the window of the car, which was rolled down. I presume that if an odor is strong enough, you can detect where it's coming from.
Are you depending on that fact to support your position that there is probable cause to arrest? What facts are you depending upon? What if we agree with the Court of Appeals and say you couldn't tell? I think this is a natural follow-up to the Chief's question. You couldn't tell really where it was coming from, whether it was the front seat or the back seat. It just sort of permeated the car. Now, are you still going to argue that probable cause existed to arrest?
I think that even if you cannot pinpoint the odor, there is still probable cause. But probable cause is stronger if you can pinpoint the odor.
Probable cause to arrest.
Yeah.
So what are the other factors?
Well, those are the only facts we have in this particular case.
Well, that's the only thing you have is the smell coming from the driver's side. An odor of marijuana, right?
Right.
Coming from the driver's side. Those are the only two facts.
He's the only one in the vehicle.
The only one in the vehicle.
And I think the fact that is the subject of the most legal dispute here, and the officer testified it was a strong odor of marijuana. Now, some of the cases on which the public defender relies, say that the strength of the odor of marijuana is not something that's relevant in the probable cause analysis. The cases that we rely on say that the strength of the odor is very important in the probable cause analysis.
Was there a gradation, you know, of odors? I mean, that's generally recognized for marijuana. I mean, you get an intoxicator. You can register the alcohol. You don't have something like that to register the odor of the marijuana.
Well, at least not something that police officers carry with them out on the beat, so that when they happen to come across
it's unexpected. It's a subjective kind of thing.
It is.
If he had a cold, he might not know it was so strong.
That might be true.
Mr. Ballesteri, is the training and experience of the officer relevant here on the issue of probable cause?
Well, I think it's essential that the officer know the smell of marijuana in order to recognize the smell of it. And here we do have testimony that the officer was familiar with the smell of marijuana, had been trained to detect that odor, and therefore was able to detect it.
Now, you know, in drunk driving cases where you have probable cause to arrest all the time, the officer smells alcohol, right? Usually on the breath rather than just permeating the car.
Usually, yes, that's...
And the officer might ask the driver to get out of the car and take a field sobriety test.
They often and usually do.
So then you get a scientific reading for it. But that's not, I shouldn't say scientific reading. So, and you can ask them to say numbers backwards or whatever is the current test. And that's probable cause to arrest, right?
It is.
The smell plus these things. Well, are there any physical effects on this driver that the officer testified to? You know, he's glassy-eyed, speech was slurred. He obviously must have been under the influence of something if he had marijuana in the car and stopped a police car. I mean, most times people who have contraband aren't going to go up to the cop, right?
Probably not, but we don't have any indication of this gentleman's IQ either.
Okay, but did the police officer testify about any of this, any effects of the guy being high?
Well, he did testify, and he testified that, no, there were no visible effects.
No visible effects, okay. So the only thing he had was the odor, single person in the car, driver's sight, strong odor.
Strong odor.
Mr. Ballesteri, isn't there some discussion here in the record about a sense that the odor was coming from the lips? I mean, what was that all about?
Well, that was kind of an embarrassing aspect of this case. No, there is nothing in the record to suggest that the odor was coming from Mr. Seacrest's breath. Unfortunately, however, this is a misdemeanor case, and it was originally briefed in the Court of Appeals by the district attorney. And in the district attorney's brief, she made the assertion that the police smelled odor coming from the breath of the defendant. Unfortunately, that is not supported by the record. That's not what the officer testified to.
Where was marijuana found in the car?
Yes, they ultimately, when they did a search, they found a marijuana cigarette in the ashtray.
Where was the ashtray in relation to the driver?
Well, we don't have any specific testimony, but I would assume that most cars, the ashtray is somewhere in the middle of the front of the car near the console underneath the instruments. I have to assume that's where it was in this case.
Was it hot, still burning, or just been put out, or cold?
We have no evidence of any of that.
Didn't the officer say something about when the individual was out of the car, there was some halting speech or something about...
The officer made some comments about there was some aberration in his behavior, but not enough to indicate that he was under the influence of a controlled substance.
Is there anything in the record, or is there anything we can take judicial notice of, with respect to how long the odor of marijuana will hang on in a car, or a room, or whatever?
No.
What?
I'm sorry.
Is it different than just cigarette smoke? Or
I don't know.
Or a pipe smoke?
Yeah.
Shame.
Outside.
The odor, however, is very unique. It doesn't smell like cigarettes or pipe.
Let's talk about pipe tobacco.
Right. That's why I want to know how long does it last?
Cigarette smoke lasts.
We have nothing in the record to indicate exactly how long the odor of marijuana would last in the car. Nor am I aware of anything that this court could take judicial notice of that would allow you to at least assess in this particular case how long the odor had been present in this car. I mean, we do have case law that stands for the proposition that the odor of marijuana does linger.
Does
linger. But it doesn't linger at the same strength. I mean, we're all familiar with odors. We're all familiar with cigarette odors, pipe odors. Anyone who attended the University of Wisconsin in the 1960s is familiar with the odor of marijuana. You couldn't get away from it anywhere you went.
I didn't inhale.
I'll bet you did. You may not have inhaled intentionally.
Secondhand smoke.
We all do.
All right, now we've clarified that. We can move on.
If I could just follow up on this in a serious vein. If the defendant were to suggest today, this could be that the presence of marijuana could have occurred 7 days previous. You have nothing to rebut that.
Yes, I do.
Okay. What do you have?
The fact that the odor was strong, and this is the fundamental point that I want to make here today, is that what we are dealing with is only probable cause. We're not dealing with a degree of certainty that has to be established to convict anybody at a trial. We're not dealing with proof beyond a reasonable doubt. We're not even dealing with a standard of certainty that makes it more probable than not that the odor of marijuana was recent in the car. Probable cause does not have to be more probable than not. It only has to be reasonably probable. And this reasonable probability is not the kind of certitude that's that's determined by judges or by legal technicians or by scientific technicians. It's a reasonable probability as determined by a reasonable police officer who's out talking to Mr. Sechrist with the window of his car rolled down. And for that degree of certainty, a police officer who testifies that he smells a strong odor of marijuana is sufficient to give that officer reason to believe that the marijuana was smoked recently. And that, together
Did
with...
Did he testify to that? That his belief that because of the strength of marijuana, and I have some doubts as to whether or not this officer could withstand a cross-examination as to his ability to tell a strong smell of marijuana from an average smell, from a small smell. But did he testify to his training or anything that allowed him to identify this as a strong odor?
Well, he,
recent.
No.
A
recent?
That's what you want.
Yeah. No, not specifically. No, he didn't.
So he didn't say it was recent?
No, he did not.
He just said
he
it was
He didn't say that, but I think that his belief that it was recent can be inferred from his actions. If he didn't think it was a recent smell, he wouldn't have arrested Mr. Sechrist.
Was it Mr. Sechrist's car?
I believe it was, yes.
Maybe?
I believe it was his car, yes.
Counsel, just a question. In the area of alcohol, and I think that if there was no other factors, if a person had alcohol on his breath, and the officer smelled that, because I understand no other factors. He wasn't driving, there was no vehicle violation. Drinking alcohol is not illegal.
Not
being,
per se.
Yeah, per se. But smoking marijuana is,
that's
per
correct.
Se, illegal.
That's correct.
Does that cast any different view of this with the assumption that the smell of, marijuana is illegal? Just, that's it. And then coupling that with the other facts.
Sure. In order to have probable cause to arrest for drunken driving, you have to, first of all, have reason to believe the defendant was driving, obviously. But secondly, it's not illegal to drive when you've been drinking. It's only illegal to drive when you've been drinking enough to put you under the influence. Or in mathematical terms, you have to have 0.10 in your blood. That's not true of marijuana. If you're smoking marijuana, that's illegal, regardless of how much marijuana you smoked. If you've taken one puff off of a marijuana cigarette, that's illegal.
Well, that brings us back to your beginning. We know that there's probable cause to believe a crime has been committed because there's the smell of marijuana. Smoking marijuana is a crime, right?
That's correct.
The problem that the state has is to tie it to this defendant.
And that's correct.
And if he had the cigarette in his hand, you've got
him.
We
have no problem.
Right. Or if you saw him putting out the butt, that wouldn't be a problem.
No problem.
And if they touched it and it was still hot and it was very recent,
no problem.
No problem. The problem they have here is you've got a butt. You don't know when it was smoked. You don't know whose it is. And the smell is from the front seat. And I doubt that the officer can tell where there's coming from the ashtray or to the right or left of that ashtray.
Well, we don't have any testimony here one way or the other. He just said he thought, or at least the circuit court construed or inferred from the testimony of the officer that the officer could tell that it was coming from the area where the defendant was seated. Those are the facts that we have to work with in this particular case.
But you do believe that even without that fact, i.e., that the officer said it was coming from where the defendant was,
right?
If the trial court hadn't put that fact in, and it simply decided that there was an odor, it was a strong odor, and he was alone in the car, that's enough.
Sure. And the reason for that, and let me just kind of recapitulate or summarize here, the fact that there's a strong odor of marijuana gives rise to a reasonable inference that the marijuana has been smoked recently. If the marijuana has been smoked recently, if the marijuana has been smoked recently in this car, and if the defendant is the only one in this car where the marijuana has been smoked recently. That's not overwhelming proof, and the trial court said that. It's not proof beyond a reasonable doubt, but it's enough. Maybe barely enough, but it's enough to give an officer reason to believe that this defendant has been smoking the marijuana.
Counsel, Chief, may I have
Of what import is it that this is an auto rather than a building? I know there are Supreme Court cases that indicate the requirement for search warrant is different when assessing an auto as opposed to a building. What import is auto in this fact situation?
Well, as far as the arrest is concerned, it doesn't make any difference. As far as a search is concerned, it would make a great deal of difference because, being an automobile, as you point out, we do have what's called the automobile exception to the search warrant requirement. We don't need a warrant to search.
Why wouldn't it make a difference? I say this more from a, not from a legal point of view, but just it makes sense to me, that even for probable cause to arrest, realizing that it's an auto and there's a single person in the auto, that you're dealing with a confined situation and where the universe of possibilities of people being in this confined situation is limited. So
yeah, factually, yeah, that it does make a difference. It does make a difference in terms of trying to pin down the odor to this one specific person. It's an example that the Chief Justice and I were discussing earlier of being in the courtroom. Can you pin down the odor? If it's coming from there, no. If it's coming from there, yes. If you're in a confined area, then you can more easily pinpoint that odor to a particular person.
And if you found me in Judge McDonald's office, which is very nice, but a relatively small room, much smaller than this, with a strong smell of marijuana, and I'm in it alone.
We probably have pretty much the same situation as...
So you could arrest me, detain me, take me from the building out to the sheriff's.
Assuming other things being equal.
Could I ask a question? The driver of the vehicle was arrested. And then shortly thereafter, a search was conducted. And a cigarette and a roach clip were found. Suppose the search had revealed absolutely nothing. What would have happened then?
Well, I think that what would have happened then is they probably would have decided to unarrest him and let him go.
Why? They got probable cause.
Yeah, but...
I mean, you can't get probable cause by hindsight. That's the point of Justice Prosser's question.
No question about it. But probable cause isn't enough to convict him.
No, but that's not their job. Their job is to arrest.
Well, I think any prosecutor in this state would put a caveat on that and say, your job is probable cause to arrest, but hopefully you're going to arrest in those situations when we can prove it at the trial. We're willing to concede they couldn't prove it on beyond a reasonable doubt just on the basis of the smell. They needed more. They needed that cigarette to actually go to trial and convict.
But that's true generally. Have probable cause and they're going to find evidence, they're not going to convict. I mean, that's not just true in this situation.
No, it's not. It's generally true. And that's why, we have in the statutes, we have a statute that says police officers can unarrest someone after they've arrested them if further investigation doesn't turn up enough to warrant actually taking the person down to the station, they can let him go. And I think that's what they would have done in this case had they not found the cigarette.
Just
established. Thank you. Indulge the court. Indulgence. I always refer to these, I guess, as the former prosecutors, the building blocks of facts that make up probable cause. And you're saying that the building blocks of odor, strength of odor, and alone in the car are sufficient to constitute probable cause to arrest.
That's
now, let's remove one of those facts, strength, so that we just have odor and we have alone in the car. Now, do we have enough for probable cause?
I honestly do not think so. I think the strength of the odor
is
the critical
component.
Fact that puts us over the line. It's the fact that allows us to infer that the marijuana has been smoked recently, and that's what ties us in with the defendant being alone in the car.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Balistrieri. Mr. Donnelly, this is Patrick Donnelly, Assistant State Public Defender, representing Mr. Sechrist.
Good afternoon. I had prepared some opening remarks here that I think at this point I'm going to abandon, since it would simply rehash much of what's been discussed here this afternoon thus far. It was nice to note that both the state and the respondent here are starting out with some point of agreement, that being that the odor alone could be insufficient to establish probable cause. And I assume I would take that concession to mean that would mean concession for probable cause for both the purposes of arrest and the purposes of search. Where our positions differ here really boils down to what the state has referred to as a few additional facts here which would be necessary in order to arrest or search under certain circumstances. I would strongly disagree, and I would say that's a subjective position on my part, that the officer's assertion that this odor was strong really has any substantive meaning under the circumstances of this case. And I say that for several reasons. I would disagree that an odor, be it strong or mild, would necessarily indicate that there is contraband currently located in the place that that odor has been detected. I think the fact that it has been detected simply indicates that at some point in time in the past, it has been present, whether it be recently, currently, or some distant, at some point much further in the past.
Now, wait a minute, just so I understand. You're saying that that if there's a strong odor, regardless of marijuana, that there isn't a difference between, I think I detect an odor of marijuana?
I think under the circumstances of this case, that is true, and that is because a strong odor, let's assume for the sake of argument that it is a strong odor, that could raise two inferences. One, the contraband has been smoked recently, or two, the contraband has been smoked quite often in the place that the odor is strong. And I think common sense and our own experiences would support the argument that if somebody has a car that's smoked in with cigarettes, the more it's smoked in, the stronger the odor is. One of the facts in this case that I think was crucial, that was missing, and I think the question was asked here, was this car Mr. Sechrist's? And I don't believe the record supports an inference that the officer made any determination as to whose vehicle this was prior to the time that he arrested Mr. Sechrist. Maybe that was one of the building blocks. I don't know, but it was not present in this case. I would argue, additionally, even for the sake of argument, let's say he had limited this odor to Mr. Sechrist personally. Maybe that's an additional building block, but I would argue that the strength of that has to be questioned, given a comment that, that Justice Bablish made about that poor, unfortunate soul who finds him or herself in a situation, perhaps in a car, a closed environment, where somebody starts smoking marijuana. And the driver says, hey, this is my car, get out of the car. And a block later is stopped for missing a stop sign or some type of vehicle violation.
And then what happens to that person if there is, all right, the police say I have a strong smell, whatever. Ultimately, as we developed with opposing counsel, there would be the police are going to release that person, right?
Well, I don't know if that...
I'm just saying that would be the...
That is certainly a possibility. I would not concede that under each and every circumstance that a police officer would decide to release that person.
Well, the state takes the position that these three factors present here gave the police the authority to search. It's only after they search that they found the contraband. And they made the arrest based on contraband. That's when they found the cigarette. That's when they found the picture for smoking marijuana, roaches.
Now, do you agree with that?
No, I don't. That's not how I interpreted the state's position. It was my understanding that the state conceded that from their position there was odor, strong odor, single occupant of the vehicle, and those factors led to the arrest.
But what did this police say? They find all this, what did they do? Did they say, get out of the car, put your hands behind your back, did they handcuff them, did they move them into the vehicle, did they say you're under arrest, what did they do?
Once the odor was detected, right, Mr. Seacrest was ordered to the side of the road, ordered out of his vehicle, and according to the words of the police officer, he was arrested.
Mm-hmm. He was arrested, okay. And then they searched the car. Was this a search incident to an arrest?
Well, that is how it was justified by the state at the time of the suppression hearing, and that is how the officer characterized it. And I must admit I have some grave concern at this point in time, this late date, suggesting that somehow this search can be sustained or resurrected on some basis that there was probable cause to search, because there was an intervening illegality that really brought these fruits of that illegality forward. There was, under no stretch of the imagination, was this search conducted independently or wholly attenuated from the arrest. There was nothing going on independent of that arrest that led to the search.
Your position is there was an arrest first, then a search.
Correct. Another comment that I must admit concerns me a bit, that the state made during the course of their argument, is suggesting to this court that this case is somewhat easier to deal with because it merely involves the requirement of finding a probable cause. That would be an argument to be made quite easily if you're not the subject of a person who is subject to an illegal arrest and has to face the humiliation and the stress of being arrested, albeit just for a few minutes, along a public highway, handcuffed next to a car. And you can, if nothing is found, you do have the assurance that perhaps you'll be released. But then again, you've been standing next to a car along the road, handcuffed with...
Was he handcuffed?
Quite frankly, Your Honor, I don't recall if that is in the record.
You know, drugs are really a significant factor in the society in crime. So it's not merely the drug, but all of the other effects in society and with crime. And here you have an officer, and this car just reeks of stuff. And what does he do? Is he going to just say, so long, it's nice to know you? Is he going to say, look, I'm assuming... I mean, he could check it on the by the radio, but he says, I'm assuming it's this guy's car. He's all alone. It smells. Even if it's not a recent smell, it's his car. He's probably done it before. And I'm not going to let him go. I mean, there's a war on drugs. And what's it going to be like if I say, oh, yeah, you reeked of the stuff, or the car reeked of the stuff, and I just said, so long, because... I don't have probable cause to, I don't have a reasonable ground to think that it's this guy that smoked the last cigarette in this car. We push the state hard on what's reasonable and what are the building blocks, but I want to push you just as hard and say, I'm presenting the state's position, in effect, and just needs reasonableness. So what's so unreasonable by saying, hey, you're under arrest, we're taking in, we can search the car incident to arrest, we can do an inventory search of the car, we got it. I mean, isn't that good police work?
I think good police work is a little more inclusive than that, particularly under the circumstances of this case. Clearly, Officer Saserba had a reasonable suspicion to perform a Terry stop. And what a Terry stop suggests is further investigation. He could have temporarily detained Mr. Seacrest and made whatever observations of Mr. Seacrest that were appropriate.
They can pat him down.
They could pat him down if there was a belief that he presented some type of risk of harm to them, which...
That's what a Terry stop is.
Right.
Search for weapons.
Correct. If there is
so
some reason...
So they pat him down and he's got a bulge in his side pocket and it's soft and feels a narcotic. That's the plain field test. They could do that, but they didn't.
They did not.
They arrested him.
That's correct.
How do we know they arrested him? Were the magic words said to him, you're under arrest?
The officer testified at the suppression hearing that as soon as he smelled the odor, he ordered the defendant to the side of the road and placed him under arrest.
Of course, if they're doing a Terry search and he feels what might be a narcotic appliance in the pocket, that's not good. He's got to have a weapon there before he can go into that pocket. That he believe, I had one case where he said that the equipment felt like a gun. Well, there was no contradiction to that. Well, then he had a right to enter the pocket for his own safety. But it isn't, if you know it's narcotic equipment, that doesn't give you the right to go into the pocket.
Counsel, did you want to answer? Is that a question? Or? Okay, counsel, you concede, I take it, that the officer did have probable cause to search the vehicle.
Absolutely not.
Oh, you don't concede?
I did not make that concession.
Okay.
You just concede that there was enough reasonable suspicion for Terry stop. That's your only concession? That's your only agreement here?
Well, part of the problem I have with this entire discussion is this case was never litigated previous to the time that the briefs were filed in this court, that the search was ever discussed.
Either of the vehicle or the defendant.
You're asking me if I take...
I'm saying that neither search of the person or vehicle was discussed below.
That's correct.
It was an arrest case.
It was simply an arrest case.
Well, what if the officer here had simply said, let's assume that you're wrong on the question of search. In fact, let's say that... at least, for purpose of this question, I believe that there was probable cause to search the order alone. But we know that marijuana, at least at some point, has been in that car. But what if the officer simply ordered him out of the car and then conducted a search of the vehicle, not placed him under arrest?
That
he looked for something more before he said those magic words, assuming that the initial search was okay. Could he have done that?
I believe so.
And then finding the roach and the marijuana cigarette, you could have, I don't really know, maybe they're the same as the roach. I didn't inhale anything. A roach clip, isn't that what they call it? A roach clip in the marijuana. So finding something more, at that point then, I think I would probably be willing to say that there was probable cause to arrest. But couldn't he have done that? Couldn't he have simply said, hey, you, out of the car, search the vehicle?
If he had not... assuming for the sake of argument that you can perform that type of search and the order alone creates probable cause, yes, I believe he could have. That would have been an appropriate search of the vehicle on probable cause. And had there been contraband found, if there was sufficient link between that contraband and the driver, then...
But why aren't you arguing that, then? Why aren't you arguing that, hey, there was a way to do this right?
Well, I believe there absolutely was a way to do this right. And I think the simple answer to that really lies in a question that Justice Prosser asked. He asked on the record, on this record, wasn't there some indication that at some point in time in his contact with this defendant, didn't the officer observe some things about this defendant that indicated to him that he may have been impaired in some fashion? And I think that is a rough description of what happened in this record. And that, in fact, I believe is reflected in the record in some form. But that came after the arrest. That information was gained as a fruit of that arrest. If some other attack had been taken here, and assuming for the sake of argument the probable cause, the sufficient probable cause to search, yes, there are ways to this could have been accomplished.
Donnelly, before the arrest occurred, we have a gentleman in an automobile that reeks of marijuana. That gentleman drives up of his own volition to a uniformed officer, asks direction after putting the window down. Can I draw any inferences from that rather unusual conduct?
Well, in fairness to Mr. Sechrist, I would hope that we don't draw too many inferences from it, but I must admit it caused some chuckles in my office. But on the other hand, it really does beg the question about those citizens who, under totally innocent circumstances, find themselves in a vehicle that reeks of marijuana.
Yeah, but now you gave the hypothetical a minute ago. You're driving an automobile, someone's in your car, and they start to light up a marijuana cigarette. And you say, get out of my car, I don't want you there. Would you then have driven right shortly thereafter to an officer to ask directions? I mean, wouldn't you have, if you've been clear-headed, wouldn't you have kind of suspected you would create a problem for yourself?
Well, I hate to answer a question with a question, but what if it happens to be an elderly woman who has no idea what the odor of marijuana is, and her grandchildren have been visiting for the weekend, and they borrowed the Buick, and they've run a stop sign, and she pulls up and asks questions. I mean, what criteria do we use to distinguish the grandmother from the young white male who's driving what I don't think is a compact car, unless it's been an Impala is closer to a somewhat larger car than a compact car. But really, I don't think that we can, on this record, really infer anything from that fact. Because, one, it requires that we assume that Mr. Sechrist, with hindsight it might be certainly a fair inference, that Mr. Sechrist knew what the odor of marijuana smelled like. You know, there are persons, I suspect, still in this community who don't, who smell a funny smell, be it the grandmother, be it the unfortunate soul who's driving a car that's been...
How old was the defendant?
I believe he was 21 or 22 years of age.
Well, he wasn't a little old man.
No, he certainly wasn't, but I don't know if we want to single out the young people of our community as having any particular indicia of probable cause to be abusing drugs based on their age.
But the fact that a 21-year-old person in an automobile that smelled strongly of marijuana went to a police officer, is that even a feather added to the probable cause?
I would not concede that it is. I think a more fair inference is that if we can just get past the hindsight here, knowing what was found in the vehicle, I think it's more an indication of innocent conduct. That someone would have the audacity to drive up to a police officer and roll down the window if he had just recently smoked a cigarette would be, a marijuana cigarette would be absurd. Which, of course, in fairness to the record here, that may have been exactly what happened. But there are circumstances, and I had in my prepared remarks a whole list of circumstances I'm prepared to list here in front of you today, where folks can find themselves in that same position that Mr. Sechrist was in and be subject to the to act exactly the same circumstances, and perhaps the police officer would not have taken the action he took based on some non-objective criteria. I think if this officer had engaged in a further investigation here, it may well have developed into probable cause to arrest and probable cause to search, or to conduct a search incident to an arrest based on probable cause. Those few additional facts did not arise in this case. I must admit that I have some concern with the state's suggestion that there is some alternative here that this court should consider in terms of a court-devised justification for this search. That is that independently there was probable cause to search, so okay, they were wrong about the arrest. It was an unlawful arrest, but if they had conducted it based on a search based on probable cause to search, this would have been fine. But that argument ignores the intervening illegality, and I would suggest to the court that if you accept that argument, it would completely undermine the purpose of the exclusionary rule. And it would concern me a great deal if we put the message out that in a circumstance like this, we make it clear to police officers there is not probable cause to arrest a person based solely upon the odor of marijuana coming from a vehicle. But we suggest to the law enforcement community, that they can conduct a probable cause search under that circumstance. I am concerned if there is not some message sent that no, it cannot be done in the inverse. You cannot illegally arrest someone and then justify it later on some other legal theory that you may have appropriately considered at the time but didn't.
Well, isn't it the suggestion that Justice Abbott had about the possibility of search alone? If marijuana is a legal substance, what about that just saying that if there is a smell of marijuana, that's enough probable cause to search that vehicle?
Again, I guess
not,
I...
Not arrest, just search.
Well, you had asked earlier about alcohol, and I think...
But that's not illegal.
Well, under certain circumstances, it can
be. Yes.
It can be
if you're underage.
Well, also if you have open intoxicants in the vehicle. If you smell the odor of alcohol coming from a vehicle, can you immediately arrest the driver of a vehicle for open intoxicants without conducting some type of investigation?
Search with the open alcohol.
Well, that, of course,
makes a difference if you find the alcohol bottle in the glove compartment. It's locked, but it's alongside him on the seat, and there's the odor of alcohol as a breath.
That, of course, that question hasn't been litigated in this case, but...
You'll give us an answer.
I think the courts have made it clear that odor alone is insufficient for the purposes of probable cause.
Some courts have.
I think even the United States Supreme Court at some point made that suggestion. And that case was discussed, I believe, in the Michigan case. And it had to do with prohibition, I believe, at the time when alcohol was absolutely illegal.
I thought that you were referring to the odor of marijuana. Some courts have decided that the odor alone is sufficient to constitute probable cause.
Absolutely.
Probable cause for what?
Both probable cause to search and probable cause to arrest. And if this court lends any credence to the rationale that was explained in both of the Michigan cases, I believe the Taylor case was actually a search case and not an arrest case. They are both based on this premise that odors have a residual effect, be they strong or not. And unless you can link that odor to the commission of a crime by any specific defendant, or link it to the location currently of contraband, neither a search nor an arrest can be found to be viable on probable cause under the circumstances.
And that's your position?
Yes.
No link here to the defendant?
Correct.
Because this was an arrest case.
Yes.
And a link is needed.
I think it's fundamental. With that, I would conclude my comments unless anyone else has any questions.
Is there any further questions? Well, thank you, Mr. Donnelly. The State Balistair, you'll have 5 minutes in rebuttal. Is this an arrest or a search case?
This is both. And I'll tell you exactly why it's both. Because an illegal arrest by itself is irrelevant. An illegal arrest has absolutely no effect on the suppression of evidence unless somehow that illegal arrest contributed to the discovery of the evidence. That's a well-established principle. So even assuming, for the sake of argument, that the arrest was illegal, that does not require automatic suppression of the evidence found in the car. We have to find some kind of link between the illegal arrest and the search of the car which discovered the marijuana cigarette. And here, there is none.
Well, but for the arrest, we wouldn't have searched the car.
But for is not the analysis. The question
is,
is there a link? Did the arrest give the police some additional information which allowed them to establish probable cause to search the car? Or, put another way, would the police not have searched the car if they hadn't arrested the defendant? And either way you look at it, the answer is the arrest was irrelevant. They gained no additional information as a result of arresting Mr. Sechrist. They had whatever probable cause they had to search the car, they had before the arrest. The arrest added absolutely nothing. And as far as would the police not have searched the car if they hadn't made the arrest, certainly they would have searched the car if they hadn't made the arrest. They would have conducted, as you were discussing with Mr. Donnelly, a Terry stop, which he admits they had reasonable suspicion to do. They would have just said, "Hold it, bud. Stay right here for a minute. We're going to search your car."
Counsel, you've listed the issue in your brief as follows. Can the odor of a controlled substance, such as marijuana, provide probable cause to arrest? Are you now amending the issue, or is that the issue?
No, that's the issue. That's the issue. But we still, if we're going to get to the suppression question, we have to go one step farther. Just saying that there's an illegal arrest, if you were going to say that, that doesn't get the evidence suppressed. We have to take it one step farther.
Well, I mean, why do we have to get to suppression of evidence if there is not probable cause for an arrest? That's a discrete legal issue having nothing to do with, perhaps having nothing to do with suppression of evidence.
Exactly.
So, as you have set forth the issue, it is one sentence. Can the odor of a controlled substance, such as marijuana, provide probable cause for arrest? I read that to believe that we have before us a legal issue as follows. Probable cause to arrest that be based on this odor of a controlled substance.
This case arises out of a suppression hearing. What Mr. Sechrist wants is the suppression of the evidence that's found in his car. If you decide that the arrest was legal based on probable cause, we end it right there because everything the police did subsequently was legal. If you should decide that the arrest was illegal, we still don't suppress the evidence. We have to go one step farther. We have to decide whether that illegal arrest had any effect on the officer's discovery of the marijuana in the car. In other words, was the discovery of the marijuana in the car the fruit of a poisonous tree under the Wan Sung Doctrine?
Have we now heard your inevitable discovery argument?
No, I'm not arguing inevitable discovery.
You aren't going to do it.
I am not arguing inevitable discovery.
All right. Well, it sounds like.
No, what I am arguing is that this arrest had no effect on the search whatsoever.
Well, counsel, we have a slight procedural issue on appellate practice. Your petition for review stated the issue just as Justice Bradley set it forth. And I think, maybe I'm wrong, that it's not until the last page and a half of your brief that you take position, or you start to take the position that you're taking now. And the rules of the court are that the only issue to which you are entitled a decision on this court, although the court has discretion to go further, is the issue you present in your petition for review.
But the issues are one and the same. There's no difference.
Well, let's just look at the petition for review again.
But look at, why don't you look at instead at the decision of the Court of Appeals in this case?
Because that's not the test under our statute. The test is what issue did you argue? And your issue is, can the odor of a controlled substance, such as marijuana, provide probable cause to arrest? This issue was raised as the only issue on appeal in the brief of defendant appellant. And then the Court of Appeals ruled the mere odor of marijuana doesn't provide probable cause for arrest. Then it keeps going on the criteria for doing that, and I'm sorry I won't be able to find it fast enough as to whether or not you go into suppressing evidence. Now, I totally agree with your response to Justice Bradley that this is a suppression of evidence case. That's how it got there. But I don't know that that's the issue that you raised to this court or that this court took the case for, and then my question will be, do we have to, and I don't think you ever said the word suppression of evidence in your petition for review. So then the question will be whether or not the court should deal with that as an issue, because it's not the one we took the case for, and whether or not we should have additional briefs on that. But I leave that to the court, but that's one of my problems with the case.
Well, you can't deal with the opinion of the Court of Appeals without dealing with the question of whether or not an illegal arrest had any effect on the seizure of the evidence, because that was the finding of the Court of Appeals. The Court of Appeals found that the discovery of the evidence was the fruit of the poisonous tree. They said the arrest was bad, and as a result of the arrest, the search was bad. So you cannot deal with the opinion of the Court of Appeals without reaching the question of the effect of the arrest.
That's right. And then of seven pages, there is three lines on suppression in the Court of Appeals. to the last three lines, one sentence. Because the evidence relied upon for conviction was fruit of the search, subsequent and unlawful arrest, we reverse Secret's conviction. The rest of the opinion is totally about grounds for arrest. Right? Okay. Thank you, counsel. Thank you, Mr. Donnelly. We are now adjourned for our Superior sitting. We thank you again for coming. Thank you.
Thank you.